Welcome to Paddling Adventures Radio. I'm Sean Rowley, and with me is Derek Spech.
Hello.
How's it going, Derek?
Fantastic.
I was out in a t-shirt the other day.
Not Monday.
I think it was Saturday.
Yeah. The weekend was really, really nice. Right? It was really warm and hot. It was like, hey, it's summer. And then summer was over.
Yes.
And
summer came for the weekend.
Yes.
Just stayed for the weekend.
And then it was
done. I had to go home.
Yeah, yeah.
Whoever summer home is, it went. Yeah, because we had frost on the truck on Monday morning.
Yeah, it was so cold come Monday. But yeah, the weather is so chaotic right now. Like, have you seen all the flooding up north? Like,
Northern Ontario and that? Ridiculous.
Muskoka and everywhere's up north. It's the water levels are so high.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I know Mike Burns, he's going to French River soon, but it's like, I was reading articles, the French River mayor's going, it's the worst it's been. Some of them are saying some locations are saying worse in 60 years. Some are saying the worst flood in 20 years. Anyways, the water levels are crazy high. Everybody's sandbagging and people are losing, like, you know, any low level homes are, you know, have water damage.
Yep. And there's a mall in North Bay, Ontario, so the Northgate Mall. And there's people paddling canoes in the Northgate Mall parking lot.
the famous picture that Randy took.
Yeah,
it was. So they call that they're calling it Beer Lake. So Beer Lake is back again this
in
year.
Huntsville, yeah. Beer store,
the beer store parking lot. So Beer Lake is back again this year.
Wow.
So yeah, there's pictures of and videos of people in canoes everywhere online, but it's just, there's so much water, like roads are flooded and it's just insane. And surprisingly, so specifically French River, because I was looking that one up. So the waters are like record highs, but the ice still isn't out.
Right.
So it's like, whoa, but the ice is so thick in some areas. Like they were saying in some areas of Algonquin Park, North End, like 24, 28, 30 inches of ice on lakes. It's like, that's a lot.
It's going to be a hit or miss May opening season for fishing and paddling.
Exactly.
We'll have to see.
So Mike's doing his trip, but it's there's nothing open, so he can't even fish. So there's no, like, bass.
He's going for a canoe drag.
Yeah, he's going for it's going to be high water, so good luck to him. I kind of want to go, but I kind of don't want to go.
Did he invite you to go?
He did. Yeah, he asked. So Martin already said he couldn't go. Scott's going. I want to go, but I don't know.
I mean, you don't know. It's a canoe trip. Why would you not go?
I have work. We just started another.
Oh, work. Work is for chumps. What do you mean work?
I would have to pull strings to get some time off at work. And I don't want to owe people for that.
Become Geppetto and pull those puppet strings.
Yeah.
Dance puppets. Yeah. Work for me. I've got a canoe trip to go on.
Yep. Anyway, it would be very interesting, exciting, but like I don't know where you're going to find open campsites. You'd have to make some in some locations. Find high rocks to put a tent up on, right?
The snow's gone. It's just ice on the lake.
No, it's French River.
There's places to camp. There won't be any snow.
High rocks. No, yeah. It's not. Snow's not the problem. It's the flooding.
Flood schmud. Sleep in your canoe.
Sleep in the canoe. There you go, Mike. Sleep in your canoe.
See? Just tie it off front and back end.
Yeah. You and Scott sleep inside the canoe.
Are they sharing the canoe?
I don't know if they're going together or separate. I don't know.
Go solo.
Yeah.
So you each can sleep in your own canoe. Raft up. Don't tie off. Just find out where you end up in the morning.
Yeah. Could be interesting. Right? Hey, we ran some rapids, I think, at 2 a.m.
Welcome to Arizona.
Whoa! Wake up in the middle of Georgian Bay.
Right?
Like, uh-oh.
Are we there yet? Yeah, it's hit or miss right now.
Yeah.
So, like I said, I got a couple of them in May. It's not too far away.
I know. Yep.
I think it'll all be Well, I don't know about the high water, but the ice will all be gone by then.
The ice will be gone. That was the other trip somebody invited me on. It was in end of May. And it's like, sorry, Doug, I am not going out to Algonquin Park in late May. It'll be full on black fly season. It's just,
you know what?
It's going to be deadly.
I'm going to be testing out my bug shirt.
My zebra shirt. Hey, did you get one?
It's coming. Well, it's supposed to be here tomorrow.
Did we talk about that previously?
Yeah. So I got the zebra shirt in the name of science.
In the name of science.
I'm taking my zebra stripe shirt.
So what do they do? They painted horses or cows.
Cows like zebras.
With zebra stripes.
Yeah.
And the ones that were painted with the black and white stripes had less bugs bothering them.
Hmm. Yeah. So I ordered a zebra print shirt to wear on my portage.
Yeah.
Just see how that going, works.
What jail did you get out of?
Right. No, I didn't. Because we talked about that. Do we go up and down stripes or left and right? Do we go referee or prison?
Yeah. Referee or prison. Right. Norm, yeah.
So I went total zebra. They actually have zebra
print
shirts.
Nice.
So I've gone full on zebra. I'm going full native, as they say.
Nice.
Yeah, that's what I'm doing. Yep. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, I'm going to be interested to hear that.
We'll see what happens. But anywho, that high water sort of worked. Sort of worked in our favor. We were supposed to go paddling this weekend.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So partially my fault. Partially.
For not trying something sooner?
Forgot to try my roof. I was told the roof racks would fit my new truck the same as they fit my old truck.
And they lied.
Fiddlesticks. Technically, they fit perfect. The grooves on the roof,
yeah,
where the rubber feet fit,
yep,
fit perfect. Same distance, everything. But there's the little bracket that swings under the lip of the roof.
Yeah, to grab the underside of the opening.
Yep. And it pinches to tighten it. And then you close your door.
Yeah.
And the door sort of holds that just in case.
Yeah.
The old brackets from my old truck are about an inch too long.
Oh. Uh-huh.
So I can't tighten it enough to...
Oh, okay.
To tighten the roof rack feet down.
I was thinking that it was going to impinge upon the door closing.
Oh, no. Door would close.
But
door closed fine.
But it would rattle loose.
Yeah.
Hmm.
So, and if those came loose...
And you can't modify it?
No.
Hmm.
Unless I cut part of it off and then make the bend further up.
Yeah.
Or get really thick...
Pads. Hard rubber pads.
To put between, but they got to be like an inch thick. Yeah, it'd be.
Hmm.
Anyway, they do have fit kits and stuff.
Yeah.
But on a Sunday morning at 7 a.m.,
yeah,
when nothing's open,
I don't have time.
And you're
for
putting
this.
These roof racks on, you're like, oh, yeah, they fit. See, they fit perfect. Wait a minute.
You can't tighten
them.
So,
like I say, partially my fault for not checking these sooner. Mind you, had I not had to deal with this whole website fiasco.
Oh.
Which apparently the website should be working perfectly now.
Yep.
I would have...
Have you had feedback yet? Anybody talking about it?
The only feedback I had was from Thursday, Friday when nothing showed up right.
It's not
but
working.
All that got, yeah, all that got sorted out. I figured out
yeah,
what had happened there. And I had to go change all the feeds on like Apple Podcast and all that sort of stuff. So, anyway, I would have tried them earlier in the week, and I just didn't get the chance to do it. So, you've always got to have a plan B.
Yes.
So, the plan right now was there's a section of the Rouge River North that starts Milne Dam way up Markham Way.
Okay.
And then you can paddle down to almost the Toronto Zoo.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So, it takes about 4 hours. This time of year, the water's high enough in that you can actually paddle it.
Okay.
So it's a paddle. It's not a long, long 4 hour portage.
Dragging
where you're
over rocks.
in and out sort of thing.
So you can actually run it.
So that was the plan. We were going to leave my truck at the zoo area end, the zoo end of the thing. And John would take my new Nova Craft to Milne Dam. We'd launch, paddle all the way down. There's some white water and fast moving stuff and whatnot. So, then get to the truck, throw it on the truck, go back up, get John's car and boogie home. which we don't really do that much down this way. Mm-hmm. Everything is a paddle up and back.
Yeah.
It's rare that we do a two-car, one-canoe sort of thing.
Exactly. Everything's right? so close around here.
Yeah. So that was the plan. Had everything ready to go. And then, yeah. They did fit like on the old truck. Just the bracket that tightens down is too long.
Mm-hmm.
And we did have a plan B, so we would just throw the canoe on John's car and hit something local. So we went down to Duffin's Creek, which is high and running fast.
Yeah.
Threw on our
dry
suits.
There, right?
Oh, the ice is long gone from there. Threw on our dry suits and our PFDs. We hopped into the Novacraft Prospector and headed out for a few hours. Current was running a lot faster than normal, so there was no resting.
What did you think about the weight of the canoe?
It brings me back to the good old days of my giant green beastie.
Your Grumman?
No, it was just a no-name fiberglass freighter canoe it's heavy, definitely heavier to paddle than the...
But it's hardy. You can bounce that thing off rocks.
Oh, we can bounce that thing off of rocks and logs and you name it, and we did.
Mm-hmm.
Not rocks, but logs and stuff.
Yeah.
But
it's... The blue one, right? Yeah, the blue one.
You could tell the weight. After paddling that swift, lightweight swift for so long, you could tell the weight of that
problem. A little bit sluggish.
Made for that sort of thing. You expect it, right? But in going against the current in that fast spring water, oh my God. There's a couple spots along the river that required some extra strong paddling.
Yeah.
These spots are, you usually got to get a good speed up when you hit them on a regular day,
mm-hmm.
but now it's faster and the current's stronger.
Oh, okay.
And you go off a little bit and the current grabs the nose of the boat and wants to turn you around sort of thing. So we definitely got a good workout. Mm-hmm. I can still feel it in my shoulder a little bit. Then we made it all the way up to where we were going to our turnaround spot there and just had to steer all the way back. We didn't have to pat. Days like this in the summer, when you get into good stuff like that, I like to sit on the very back stern, like the pointy bit of the canoe, and hang my feet in the water
and just
steer.
Mm-hmm.
Not too shallow.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you're cracking your foot off or something. But you sit up high, and all you're doing is steering.
Yeah.
Right? So you get your feet dangling in the water and all that. It's comfortable, sort of. We had some good speed going back in a couple of areas and that. Saw a lot of birds along the way, like Canada geese, red-winged blackbirds, hawks. Saw a muskrat, little tiny muskrat guy swimming along.
See, I saw a lot.
Oh, yeah. Everything's starting to come out. We saw some flowers and stuff first, flowers of spring sort of deal and whatnot. A lot of green, a lot of dead stuff. You know, everything looks dead, but you're seeing the green starting to come up on
the
ground.
And you can see through the forest.
Yep. Managed to pick some bobbers and hooks out of low trees as we went by. Because, as you know, we always pick the garbage out as we go. Within reason. The spring runs, there's a lot of garbage.
Hmm.
We could have filled a few canoes. But we picked some stuff up in that. And like I say, when we're cruising by and we see them in the trees.
Yeah.
Right? Because that's where the birds get tangled in them and
stuff.
So we try to grab that stuff out and just throw it in the bottom of the canoe. We found a large yellow, you know, the dodgeballs, the big red dodgeballs you had in school?
Yep.
Found a yellow one of those.
Nice.
And a giant rubber duck.
Like an inflatable or plastic?
No, plastic. Like a rubber ducky, but big.
Like a squeaky toy for a dog?
Yeah. No. I wouldn't give it to a dog. It's probably the size of a small dog.
Okay.
But it was a big rubber duck.
Huh. Strange.
Yeah. So I kept it.
Do you know anybody with a Jeep? Give it to a Jeep friend. Here's a duck.
Here's a duck. So, yeah, we brought that one home. it was a great day for Pat. I mean, Saturday was, morning was better, and then the afternoon turned total crapola with the rain.
Yeah.
It was definitely warmer on the Saturday. But Sunday, it wasn't that bad. It started out like 2 or something like that, and ended up about 6, somewhere in there, degrees Celsius. So it wasn't that bad, especially if you had some warm stuff underneath your dry suit. you know, yeah, and we weren't putting out, I mean, we were putting out some exertion going up, but not back. So yeah, it was a great day. Weather was overcast, chilly when we started, but bright blue sky and sunshine by the time we got back, and only saw a couple other paddlers in kayaks heading north or up the river when we were coming back. It didn't look like they had dry suits. They just had like rain gear.
Mm-hmm. It's not a wide river. It's still not wise, but it's not like they're out in the lake and would have to swim ashore.
No, but still, you know, this time of year.
Yeah.
So besides the bracket and the roof racks, I also have to look at getting foam knee pads for the bottom of the canoe. It is slippery.
It is. So I have the same canoe as you. Mine's red. Uh-huh. So I've noticed that all of the stickers that came factory fitted with the stickers, the emblems and stuff,
yeah,
they all fell off.
Really?
Yeah.
Mine are on.
No, mine. Well, mine's stored outdoors.
Oh no, mine's
indoors. It's exposed to moisture but and temperature
on the
changes.
Inside of the boat.
Yeah,
I have a pad that I have.
It's very greasy surface that plastic. What do they call it? It's not tough stuff. It's I can't remember. It starts with an M. Anyways,
I'm drawing a blank.
Whatever
now.
The plastic, this three-layer plastic is, it's very greasy.
So I was kneeling, and every so often I just start sliding forward, and you got to move back. And when you're starting to slide backwards and get back onto this, because I kneel with my feet under the seat and my butt on the front bit of the seat, right? And then all of a sudden it starts sliding again. And then I got to stop paddling to move back again. But while you stop paddling, all of a sudden you're turning a little bit.
Yeah.
And the current catches the nose. And then you got to, man. So it was, I got to get something. Now you can get pads that stick on the bottom, like knee pads.
Yes.
And there's ones that are like 11 and a half inches by 26 inches long or something, so you can just stick that.
Just a little bit of padding. So you don't need the whitewater pads, the knee braces.
No.
But in your canoe, you could put in like something that, you know, if you were canoeing it backwards solo, the dog could sit on that foam pad that you glue down.
Right.
For a dual paddle.
Mm-hmm. SP3.
SP3. That's what the... Oh, you were Googling the stuff, the material.
Yeah. I knew it. It's just going... No, M didn't sound right.
What is it?
It's one of those things that you know until you're thinking of it.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's easy enough fix. Just get a pad to sit down there so I'm not sliding off all the time.
Yeah.
Plus, in the summer, my knees will... I'll have bare knees, probably.
Yeah.
So, it's not going to be the dry suit that's
sliding.
Yeah. Sliding across. So, like I say... first good slightly strenuous paddle in a while. So, like I say, feeling at the shoulder, the hip. I'm getting old, so, you know.
Yeah.
That's why I always say, if everything goes, it's going to be my hips.
Yes.
Because I notice that after a few days of portage trips,
my
hips start to go like, hey, pal, what are you doing?
By about day 2 or 3, the pain sets in, and by about day 4 or 5, it's like, I'm starting to feel better now.
Right? Maybe I'm not as old as I thought I was. I'm not as old as I felt the beginning of the week. even though we didn't get to the place we wanted to go, it's definitely a good day to get out for a paddle, and which is always a good thing. And I definitely needed to get back out on the water. So it was awesome. As I was doing research on this after I had chosen this as a topic, I started wondering who chose this as a topic. Came across an article written by Ren O'Flaherty, and we are going to go through this and try not to butcher a lot of the names and words. Good luck to me.
Yep, good luck to you. I'm not even going to try it.
Millennia? I can't even get past the second word for crying out loud. The millennia old language, Gumbangir, was critically endangered. Now a series of tourism initiatives are helping to bring it back from the brink of disappearance. So this Ren O'Flaherty went on a trip down to Australia and wrote this from his point of view. He says, I stepped into the cool salt water wading through the shallows of Moonee Creek on Australia's eastern coast. Overhead, rainbow lorikeets chattered in the eucalyptus trees while red dragonflies buzzed past. I was in the heart of Goombangir country, an Aboriginal nation spanning roughly 6,000 square kilometers between the Clarence and the Noombaka rivers of New South Wales. So far, so good. We're the first paddleboarders in the world, says our Goombangir cultural guide, Troy Robinson. We're only doing what our old ancestors have done since time immemorial. As the tour's three other participants and I struggled to steady ourselves on our foam boards, Robinson glided along the mangroves lining the banks of his ancestral lands. And we know what it's like to hop on a paddleboard for the first time and struggle.
It was tough.
I followed his lead, making long strokes with my paddle as schools of small, almost translucent mullet darted beneath my board and aquatic insects flitted across the creek's surface. Robinson, who had smeared white ochre across his cheeks and forearms, explained that his people have traditionally used the paste as a natural sunscreen. I told him I was imagining his ancestors paddling alongside us, curious about the blue foam stand-up paddleboards and plastic paddles. They would have carved their vessels out of trees, though, he said, laughing. After an 8.5-hour overnight train from Sydney to Coffs Harbour, I sought out Wajana Yam Adventure Tours to paddle with purpose. The Goombangir-owned outfitter not only offers travelers the chance to experience a sliver of Australia through the eyes of its original residents, it also directs a portion of its proceeds towards revitalizing the community's endangered millennia-old language. Before Britain began colonizing Australia in 1788, the continent was home to more than 250 Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander nations, with more than 800 dialects between them. Goombangir, whose origins are believed to stretch back thousands of years, is one of them. By 2019, just 120 Aboriginal languages remained across the nation. 90% of those were threatened with extinction. We don't truly know ourselves if we don't know our language, and we don't speak our language, says Clark Webb, a Goombangir cultural leader and Wajana Yam's founder. For a time, our language was officially listed as critically endangered. According to the National Indigenous Languages Survey, by the early 2000s, only 30 to 50 Goombangir speakers remained.
Oh, that's not a lot.
None of whom were children. In response, Webb developed three local tourism experiences under the Bulleri Murle Nyangan Aboriginal Corporation, BMNAC. Those profits were to be reinvested into the Goombangir language revitalization programs.
You can't even see the English ones.
I can't even see the English words. Programs including New South Wales' first Indigenous bilingual school, which opened in 2022. We're still endangered, but I feel like we've lifted out of the critically endangered scenario, he says. With more than 100 students enrolled between the ages of 5 and 15, the school has become an important part of the revival. We have 20 students who we consider highly proficient, and we've got another 30 who we considered as proficient. So there's 50 more.
Yeah.
Right? During our 2.5-hour, 3-kilometer, 1.8-mile paddle to and from Mooney Creek River mouth, Robinson offered us a crash course in the Goombangir language, stories, and traditional bush foods. As I paddled past mangroves, she oaks, and paper bark tea trees lining the banks, pairs of large yellow-tailed black cockatoos screeched into view. Robinson explained these birds are called Gauliar in Goombangir, and that is their presence symbolizes impending rain. He also shared knowledge passed down from his ancestors about how subtle changes in nature indicate when certain foods are ready to gather. We do the same sort of thing where you see if the trees' leaves are starting to curl down.
Yes.
Rain's coming. The humidity. Stuff like that. And yeah.
So the trees sense it.
Yeah.
Starts to protect their own leaves.
So you got to think there's things going way, 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 yeah. way back that, mm-hmm. you know, filter forward, like these birds arriving. Pointing to the she-oak on the riverbank with spindly green needles drooping from its spiky fruits, he explained, when it blossoms a nice olive tip, that tells us when the shellfish are full. He then gestured to the she-oak's bow and warped into sharp bends. We make boomerangs out of them, too. There's no other branch that'll make that bend. It makes it really tough. Andrea Pappas, a fellow paddler from Brisbane, said the tour helped her see the creek from a different perspective. Listening to Robinson talk about the creek and the Indigenous history was wonderful, she says. Indigenous people always looked after nature. Midway through the journey, we stopped for a hard-earned break. Robinson took a few steps back from the shore and dove in, sending school of mullet scattering. We soon joined him, floating with the tide and peering through goggles at curious fish below. Back on our boards, Robinson pointed out small holes in the creek bed where stingrays search for crustaceans, and hermit crabs left trails as they roamed across the sandy floor. Every few minutes, Robinson shouted in excitement as he spotted yet another stingray or flathead fish. As the creatures raced away, we followed the ripples in search of them. Wanjana Yam have such amazing operators who offer an insight not only to Aboriginal culture, but land preservation and historical process and learnings from cultural groups. Susan Colby, COFS Council's destination marketing team leader, says, that's really important and a lot of the community benefit from that. In fact, Colby said that she's so fond of Wanjana Yam's three-hour tours that she has become something of a regular guest. I've done all of them, she's exclaimed. It's just so lovely being out there and hearing the stories and food sources and just paddling around in the peace and nature. That's got to be, you'd think.
Hmm.
Especially getting the history lessons.
So that would be, the more that as you read it, I haven't read this, pre-read it, but I really kind of want to do this tour.
See?
It sounds fascinating.
We could spend 3 months, 4 months, 6 months in Australia and still
not
hit anything. Or everything that we've wanted to.
And that's the thing with traveling. Like, I'm not one to normally travel, but if I was going to travel, I don't want to just pop in somewhere, see something, and run away. I'd like to immerse myself.
Right? As we neared the creek's mouth, Robinson called us ashore and gestured to the dunes behind him. This, he explained, is the ancient Gumbangnagir archaeological site filled with shells, animal bones, and discarded tools made of rock. We call this one Munum Munum, lots of rocks, explaining how the Gumbangnagir origin gave the creek its name. Crouching down to show us shells and rock chippings scattered across the sand, he clarified that while many people would call this midden in English, the Gumbangnagir word is mirlarl. Sacred site, it means. Then turning some shells over in his hand, he spoke Gumbangnagir to country. The living earth, waterways, and skies that make up Aboriginal ancestral lands. Back at the boat ramp, after we had packed our boards away, Robinson invited us down to the creek for one final swim. I took a deep breath and dove under the water, floating in the turquoise water, needles of the she-oak filtering out the sun. I smiled knowing this paddle adventure would have a wider impact for the community's younger generation. I asked Robinson if there was a Gumbangnagir a term describing what happens when they pass their language down to the children. Gumbangnagir Dari, he said. It means being strong when you're singing, when you're dancing, and when you're on country.
Hmm.
So, going out for a paddle can be used for more than just going out for a paddle.
Yes.
You know, it's better than, yeah. more than just down
some
in the water.
Cultural lessons, history lessons.
Yeah, education while on the water. It's pretty cool. So, yeah, that'd be something to go out and do that with, especially getting that history that far back
yes,
you know, the land and you know, pointing out, well, this is what they would do with this tree, and this is what they do with those bushes, yeah. And all that. And especially down there, you get to see the stingrays and stuff like that, where here, not so much.
Brown water, brown rocks.
Right? I mean, there are times when you can be paddling and you'll see a fish or something zipping through, yeah. But not like, you know, you go down to one of the Caribbean.
Oh, the colors are amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
We don't have that. We got ripped off. Mother Nature. No, we're going to save all the colors for the hot places.
Yeah, yeah.
You guys get the dull.
You guys just get brown.
Yeah. Brown and green.
Yeah.
Like algae green. have you ever done a wilderness first aid course?
I have.
Really?
A couple of them.
So, came across this thing. Signing up for a first aid course is great, but there's one thing you should check when researching training companies.
Oh.
Which, realistically, I don't know that I've ever thought of this to check out with a first aid company. What many first aid courses fail to do is train for the period after victims are stabilized.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
An injured person needs to be looked after until paramedics or rescue helicopter or whatever arrives.
So when the immediate emergency is done, how do you maintain it, you mean?
Yeah, yeah. Period between injury and handover is critical. When victims may go into shock. In remote locations like mountains or river gorges, the patients can wait many hours till a rescue team arrives.
You could have conversations like, are you comfortable? Where would you like me to build the rock cairn for when you pass?
Right.
So,
do you have any preferences?
Input. Yeah, do you have preferences? Do you want to be on the water side or the tree side?
The injured may also need to be moved out of further danger or evacuated to a place where emergency services can get to them. Because that's the first thing. A lot of it is...
If it's helicopter lift out, then you have to make sure that there's an area where the helicopter can drop a basket or while it hovers, yada, yada, yada.
A lot of things you think about with first aid is, okay, dude's got a hole in his arm or, you know, his leg is not supposed to bend that way. Yeah. So let's get that stabilized. Da, 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 da. But you don't really think about, okay, now what? Right?
Yes.
All this involves complications beyond the initial treatment. First aid is just that, saving a life before real medical help can be rendered. But the duty of care of first aider includes keeping the victim comfortable and avoiding shock. Adventure Standards Africa operates nationally to train and legally qualify adventure tour guides. Dozens have passed into the tourism industry since 2008, including hikers, rafters, mountain bikers, and others, says Professor Graham Addison, director of Adventure Standards Africa. And this is pretty much, I mean, this is Africa, but would be the standards of everywhere where you're tourism guides.
The human body is the human body.
Addison says the emphasis is all adventure. In all adventure is on avoiding risks and managing situations where participants need special leadership and equipment to go safely on hikes and down rivers, etc. Wilderness first aid deals with likely outdoor injuries and includes the period of sustained care, teaching principles and procedures of CASEVAC. And hand over to paramedics. So not like medevac.
Yeah.
But a casualty evac.
Casualty evac. Yeah, casevac.
River proficiency is for river guides, club safety officers, and recreational paddlers. The training includes reading the river, paddling techniques, equipment, and safety and rescue. Addison's advice to the public is that they need to inquire if those running their adventure trips are legally certified, which means trained and qualified. When choosing a wilderness first aid course, aftercare should be something that is offered.
It should be. Because, so, with a lot of emergency first aid and immediate care is you know that you're just trying to stabilize some situation, car accident, trips, slips and falls, whatever, and then there's going to be an ambulance here in 10 minutes. But if you're in the backcountry,
right,
and you may have to wait, hey, you know what, it's dark, we can't fly in until first light, so you have to maintain that person's health and safety for
if they eight, fall in or something, smash their head, you got a concussion,
you have to
or staunching blood,
exactly, so it's a long period of time before maybe a flight can come in, because I know we heard about the tornado that hit North Algonquin, and the woman and her son, the tree fell on the tent, mm-hmm. and the kid was trapped inside the tent under the fallen tree, and the medevac couldn't come out till first light.
Yep.
And so they had to, so people did make their way in with chainsaws, get through the trees to preserve life right off the bat. But then they had to wait through the night until daylight when it was safe to bring in a medevac helicopter. So it's one of those things, like, I never thought about that. If you're off in the backcountry, there's no immediate rescue. It could be hours.
Right.
So you have to figure out, okay, well, I stopped the bleeding, but now I have to keep observing,
make sure
there's still circulation, make sure they're not going into shock, make sure that, you know, they're all this symptoms of shock and so on. Like when I did backcountry first aid courses, it was out west. It was a mountain safety and rescue course. And so they taught us a lot of things, but in the courses that I've taken over the years with the military or with this thing out in Canmore, they didn't say, oh, and now you have to wait 6 hours till a helicopter or mm-hmm. some kind of vehicle can make it in. It's a storm, so they can't fly or whatever, right? So I never thought of that.
And see, I did an air crew survival course, which teaches you what to do if your plane crashes in the middle of nowhere.
But the immediate actions.
The immediate action. But no, they also trained you to, okay, here's what you should long-term. Do for, because the chances of
immediate rescue
may not be
there.
So here's what you need to think about doing. And then they also get into that, well, you got to build shelter, you got to build heat, you got to get your water, all that other stuff too, right? But like for survival, but for the first aid, while you're doing that, you got to make sure dude stays with you.
Exactly.
Right. So he says when choosing a wilderness first aid course, after course is something that you should be checking if it's offered.
Yeah.
Like train us. What do we do after we, you know, bandage that big gaping hole?
Because you can stop a gaping wound and stop some bleeding and stuff like that. But then what happens over the next 6 hours?
What should we be watching? What should we be thinking about doing to, you know, maximize your chances of survival?
That's important. Because with the types of stuff that people who do canoeing and kayaking and so on, there's no quick, immediate ambulance that's going to show up on a lake and take you away. Most likely you're going to have to be airlifted.
Well, I mean, things like, you know, you don't have a stretcher.
Hmm.
So you take two paddles and a couple life preservers, right? And you stick those up through and then boom, you got yourself a stretcher.
Yep.
Right? That sort of thing.
Well, you remember the symposium at the canoe museum they went to? She talked about she had been paddling along. Somebody had come down from Silver Peak and he had slipped, tripped, and wrenched his back. He was not capable to walk. And so she went over. So she described how she had some ibuprofen and she was able to give him some medication to ease the pain. But, you know, the helicopter landed in a very precarious situation on the edge of the lake and they had to move that guy from the campsite into the canoe, get him over to the helicopter. So there was a long period of time where they waited with him on the shoreline until the helicopter came in. So it never occurred to me that there's, like, obviously there's a lot of stuff you have to do, but to think ahead, to say, I might need to beef up on a few of my skills here to know how to preserve life long term in case there is inclement weather that would prevent an immediate rescue.
Right. Now, stuff like, I mean, so sort of this, but not the backcountry of paddling, but mountains and stuff like that.
Yeah.
If you're going on when you're, peak bagging days in the Adirondacks.
Inclement weather. Something happens. It could be a day or more before somebody can make it in, because if the weather's bad, they can't fly in.
Right.
They'll have to hike in with people with stretchers, or they'll make a makeshift stretcher and then hike you back out.
Mm-hmm.
It's
as long as I don't have to carry the stretcher, I'm good.
Yeah.
Do what you will. So anyway, so check that out.
Yeah.
If you're thinking of something, ask that question. Do you guys offer, or do you talk about aftercare?
Yeah. Hmm.
We've talked about the Grand Canyon, how busy it is, and you got to do the permits and the lottery and blah, 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 blah. A western U.S. canyon that is deeper than the Grand Canyon spans two states and has few crowds and stunning river views. I've Googled some of this stuff, and it is indeed stunning. One of the West's best hidden gems.
Hmm.
Hell's Canyon National Recreation Area.
Aren't they touting some kind of... Is it Algonquin that they say it's the Ontario version of the Grand Canyon is on the east end of the park? What is it called?
Barron Canyon?
Barron Canyon.
Not even close to that deep.
But I've heard just in the last couple of days, heard somebody mention it a couple times.
If they think that the Barron Canyon and the Grand Canyon are similar, apparently they haven't seen pictures of the Grand Canyon.
I've never been to the Grand Canyon.
I've been to Barron Canyon many times.
Yes, me too.
But I would not say it's anywhere close to the Grand Canyon.
If you're trying to sell tourism, maybe you could say that.
Right? Come to the Grand Canyon of the North. Ish. Grand Canyon-ish of the North.
Yeah.
Hell's Canyon National Recreation Area. To get a clear picture of Hell's Canyon National Recreation Area, we'll need to look at it by the numbers. For starters, it straddles two states, Oregon and Idaho. The entire area covers 652,488 acres.
That's a lot of acres.
And its eponymous gorge, Hell's Canyon, is the deepest river gorge in North America.
Mm.
Carved by the Snake River, Hell's Canyon measures around 8,000 feet in some places, making the comparison to the most iconic gorge in the U.S., the Grand Canyon, a natural one. Not only in Hell's Canyon, about 2,000 feet deeper than the Colorado River sculpted Grand Canyon, it's also more remote and harder to access, though the journey is well worth it.
8,000 feet.
Mm-hmm.
Holy
cow. That's a lot of feet. That's a lot of airs issues.
Huh.
Grand Canyon's gained fame over the decades as it's garnered more media attention long before people knew much about Hell's Canyon, says Peter Grubb, the founder and president of Roe Adventures, an Idaho-based company that has been operating rafting and hiking trips through Hell's Canyon since the 1980s.
Oh.
So last century. Many fewer people raft Hell's Canyon each year than the Grand Canyon. Permits are tightly controlled by the U.S. Forest Service, and hiking infrastructure is generally less developed, less used than the Grand Canyon. Also adds that Hell's Canyon is less of a sheer-walled canyon, which means you can see more stars and get more of a sense of scale and depth than much of the Grand Canyon.
Hmm.
Wow. Like the Grand Canyon, though, Hell's Canyon has a deep connection to the indigenous people who have long called this part of the country home. Most spectacular about Hell's Canyon is that it is located within the homelands of the Nez Perce, who continue to have a relationship with the land and water for over 16,500 years.
Oof.
It's a long time.
Yeah, it is a bit.
That's
before the last ice age.
Yeah. Stacia Morfin, CEO of Nez Perce Tourism, says the Hell's Canyon is a place of deep cultural, historical, and spiritual significance. Here's what you need to know before planning a trip to Hell's Canyon National Recreation Area. And by now, everybody's Googling what it looks like.
I would hope they are.
There are three main ways to see Hell's Canyon: rafting trips, jet boat tours, and hikes. We're only concerned with one of those.
The hikes?
The jet boat tours, woo! Rafting trips range from 3 to 6 days. 5 is a perfect length to explore the many special places the canyon offers, including riverside hikes, the rock art of native peoples, pioneer homesteads, and natural wonders. While you can embark on a self-guided trip along the river, you'll need expert whitewater skills and a permit. Permits for visiting the canyon are issued by the Hell's Canyon National Recreation Area. People who sign up for a trip with an outfitter don't need to worry, as the outfitter handles all permitting.
Oh, handy.
Uh-huh. That's the route I would probably go. Because even still, you like the freedom of doing your own thing, but a place like that, which you're probably never going to go to again.
Yes.
The outfitter will know all the little things and tell you the stories.
You don't want to miss this waterfall. You don't want to, here's a story about this and what's the significance of this rock. And
they'll maybe know places that aren't widely known. Yeah. Like, oh, no. Here, we're going to pull over here and it'll take an hour, but we can walk up there, get a stunning view, take some photos, walk on back, see a couple of things that aren't publicized, that sort of thing, right? So you're going to get that little insider thing too. While visiting Hell's Canyon with any company is insightful, only Nez Perce Tourism shares firsthand accounts of village sites of our family and legend stories told by Nez Perce storytellers, says Sierra Green, the company's executive director. Learning that Nez Perce culture is embedded with ecological knowledge and advanced social structures, not only of the past, but continued today, is an experience not available anywhere else in the world.
Amazing.
Mm-hmm. Hell's Canyon area is also rich in hiking trails, and hikers should plan trips between May and early June before the summer heat arrives. One of the most ancient and notable things to see in Hell's Canyon is accessible by boat or on foot. Visiting 6,000-year-old petroglyphs at Buffalo Eddy is an experience we recommend not just once in a lifetime, but as a place to build a relationship with for reflection and visioning, says Green. Many of our guests who we share this experience with are able to see themselves, feel connected to something beyond themselves, and leave with an appreciation of their life journey. You can reach the Buffalo Eddy petroglyphs via a short hike near the small city of Assateton, Washington. Hell's Canyon is located primarily in Oregon and Idaho, but the surrounding National Recreation Area does include a small section of Washington. Petroglyphs on the Idaho side are only accessible by boat, but no matter what you're doing, whether hiking, boating, or rafting, keep a lookout for local wildlife. And these are the parts I like.
Mm.
Visitors may encounter bighorn sheep, elk, deer, black bear, bald eagles, hawks, and river species such as salmon, steelhead, bass, and sturgeon.
Sturgeon.
During our time in the river, we've come to notice that mid-afternoon is when the bighorn sheep reveal themselves to us. We ask visitors to approach these moments with respect, observe from a distance, and understand that you are entering a living system where all beings have a role and responsibility.
It's not a petting zoo.
Well, if they're not huggable, then why make them look huggable? Yes, do not be going up and going touchy-touchy.
Yeah, can you imagine a bighorn sheep or something just slamming into a stone wall or off a cliff? It's like, oh, how did you enjoy that petting zoo?
Right? Your exact experience in Hell's Canyon will be weather and season dependent, so plan accordingly. May, June, and September are the best months for the combination of good flows, fewer people, and more wildlife, says Grubb. The fruit trees planted by homesteaders bear fruit, bringing black bears near the river to eat cherries, apricots, and plums, as well as berries. Because it's not so hot, other animals are still near the river's edge, more so than later in summer.
There you go. Yeah, so they're going to enjoy the cooling off area near the rivers, and so you're going to see a lot of animal and wildlife near the river.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, you're getting water to drink and so on, but also because it's a bit cooler.
As summer gets into full swing, Green shares that the warmer waters draw recreationalists from around the world seeking adventure, wildlife, fishing, and culture. Peak season for rafting trips kicks off. Come September, expect chillier weather, but sunny days and fewer visitors. So, yeah, that's because summer's over. People have to go back to school.
Yes, and I do like September tripping.
Yeah, September, it's October
suddenly
tripping.
Quieter and it's I don't know. I do prefer it. It's also you have the brisk mornings and so mm-hmm. on. It's not so hot during the day and you
it's
only have to deal with horse
flies
and not the all the black flies and mosquitoes as much.
As much. They're still there, but not
yep.
as much.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can. You're come September, expect chillier weather, sunny days, fewer visitors. As our tour season dwindles, the canyon colors of oranges and reds line the calm waters.
Nice.
True sight to observe as the canyon begins to shift back to her resting phase.
Nice.
Unlike major tourist destinations, Hell's Canyon isn't a place you can or should visit without proper planning. Cambridge, Idaho is the best place for entering the river from the south, while Lewiston, Idaho is the best access point from the north. If you go with the latter, one of the more popular options and a gateway town to many boat tours of the canyon, your best bet is to fly into Washington's Spokane International Airport. From there, it's about a two-hour drive to Lewiston, Idaho. Alternatively, you could fly into Lewiston Nez Perce County Regional Airport, though you may be limited in flight options.
Hmm.
But yeah, Google Hell's Canyon.
Did not know this existed.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. Some of the sites and that you can see. I did see a couple of videos of people paddling and stuff, and it looks really cool. Hell's Canyon National Recreation Area. Take a peek at it. And yeah, if you can't, like I say, everybody wants to go to the Grand Canyon. But if you're not ever getting a permit there,
yeah.
you got options.
Exactly.
It may yeah. not be the big, oh, we went to the Grand Canyon. Yeah. Everybody goes to the
exactly.
Grand Canyon. I went to Hell's Canyon. Ooh, that sounds dangerous.
Spicy.
Spicy. With that spice. Yours was grand. Mine was hell.
That would be neat.
Oh, yeah. Check it out. Do some Googling. We talked about this one, and I know you were asking about the annual 53rd annual Raisin River Canoe Race.
Mm-hmm.
Did anybody hear what happened? 505 paddlers in 321 boats entered, selling out the number of available start times before race day. Remember, we said there might be some, but probably not
yep.
available spots on race day yet. Not setting a record for the number of competitors. Turnout eclipsed the 2025 total of 498 paddlers and 318.
Okay, I don't think so they should have used the word eclipsed.
That's seven extra paddlers.
It eclipsed it. It was a blowout. It's like, yeah, seven extra paddlers and what?
Three boats?
Three extra boats. So that's not a... The turnout eclipsed the 2025
yeah.
total.
Yeah. Anyway, whatever makes
it
feel good.
It edged out the previous
it
record.
Edged out the previous record, yeah. Yeah, you spelled edged wrong. we joke. From long kayaks, double canoes, stand-up paddle boards, doubled kayaks, paddlers pushed themselves to complete the 30-kilometer race, which included rapids and dams to navigate. Onlookers from the banks of the Raisin River cheered on kayaks, canoes, and paddle boards as they made their way from St. Andrew's starting point all the way to Williamstown and the finish line. And a few competitors discovered, even though they had already crossed the finish line, the rapids caused some to dunk into the chilly waters, estimated to be only 5 degrees Woo-hoo. Celsius. Chilly! The overall winners finished at a time of 2 hours and 27 minutes, beating the previous 2 hours 34 minutes.
Eclipsed that
they
record.
Eclipsed that record by a mile. This year's water flow was slightly less than the previous year, and it was clear the toll the slower water took on paddlers. Claudia Munafo, Public Information Coordinator of the Raisin Region Conservation Authority and timekeeper, said a slower melt of snow with spring runoff is better at keeping the water flow levels higher in the river, thus helping competitors go faster. But this year there was the fast melt of snow. So
we've seen a lot of that fast melt in the region, in our mm-hmm. region, our specific region. There was like I was on the at the lower end of the Ganaraska, and we had tons of rain. We were there that day. It rained so hard, and we saw so much ice breaking up early April.
Yeah.
So it was all the rain.
Have you been to the fish ladder lately? Apparently, it's hammering with fish right now.
So I was there. We walk there routinely during the week in Bowmanville. And so earlier we had gone and they had blocked off the fish ladder itself with a giant sheet of metal.
Really?
They had to have used a crane. That was like, had to be, let's say, 10 by 15 foot sheet of steel. Anyways, wow. So we saw after it was pulled out, but while it was still in, it was like, hey, there's still ice on this river. Why is there so many fish jumping?
Right.
It was so many fish. It's like, this is way early. What's going on? And so now they pulled that sheet of metal out and fish are running.
Well, once the rain starts.
Yeah. But so when we saw it, there was still ice on the river. When we saw
the fish were walking up the river.
yeah. So there was still ice, and it wasn't all ice. It wasn't solid ice. It was a lot of open areas and a few ice dams. But it was like I didn't expect to see fish that early in the season.
Mm-hmm.
Which was like late. It was early April. Yeah, about that time.
Yeah.
It was like wow, and you could see there's because we've had so many rain events that the trails were washed out and you could see the river trying to cut new paths. And yeah.
Yes. We were down by the river on Saturday. I took Athena for a walk and her definition of forest bathing and my definition of forest bathing are completely opposite because she found a mini lake in the middle of the forest.
Oh no.
And went bathing.
Nice.
It's not what I meant by forest bathing.
Yeah. At least it wasn't a dead animal.
As far as we know. speaking of eclipsing, Maine's largest canoe race, Kenduskeg, a stream canoe race. Hundreds of competitors took to the water April 18th for the 59th Kenduskeg stream canoe race.
Wow, that's a long time.
16.5 mile to 26.5 kilometer course. That is the largest paddling event in New England. Well, the Raisin River one is 53rd year.
Yeah.
This one's the 59th year.
Yeah, I guess. See, I always... The fact that we've rolled over into the 2000s always throws me off.
Right.
And so when I think of 59 years, it's like, what, is that the 40s? Oh, wait, no. Okay.
No, it's the 70s or whatever, right? Race began at 11 a.m. with 5 boats launching every minute.
Oof.
Staggering start that took more than an hour and a half to send all participants downriver.
Oh, wow.
Their numbers definitely eclipsed the Raisin River. 881 paddlers competed in 461 craft.
Wow. 461 boats or watercraft or kayaks or whatever.
Fastest time of the day was 2 hours, 11 minutes, and 49 seconds. But 881
a lot of people
in boats.
Can you imagine queuing up to get in the water?
Well, every 5 minutes, or
next,
what,
five
every minute,
boats,
next five,
go.
Next five,
next five boats, five. Go. It's like, no.
I say they start it like a marathon.
Yeah, can you imagine?
Look, well, there's only 400 people made it because the rest of them all just totaled on the hill. Conditions were favorable with sunshine and water levels that many paddlers described as perfect. Even so, 6 miles falls lived up to the reputation. So you got this race. And we're going to throw a waterfall in the middle of it.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
And let's just throw like 890 people out there. It's going to be great.
I'm going to run the falls.
Several competitors capsized in the rapids with some separated from their boats before even reaching the drop.
Mm.
Few paddlers also suffered minor injuries, including cuts and scrapes. Now, this sounds like a race.
Yes.
Employees from Three Rivers Whitewater Rafting, along with the Lincoln and Lee Fire Departments and Lincoln Search and Rescue, were stationed at the falls to assist. I'm sure there was some pointing and laughing, too. Several paddlers wore costumes. Some crews taped messages to their boats, including "Go Net Speed" and "Princess" for two women in a pink canoe. Some crafts were decorated with stickers and floaties. Good time had by all.
Yeah, that sounds fun. Bit.
Right up until that drop. 6 mile falls, yeah. There's rapids, there's nice parts. Oh, yes, there's a waterfall. Yes. Did I forget to mention that when I convinced you to do this race? Yeah. I think that's all I got this week. Yeah. Ah, nope, I got one more thing. Got to recap the outdoor show.
Oh, yes, yes.
Because we're coming to an end of with all this.
End of the season.
This weekend only, the last Ottawa Outdoor and Adventure Travel Show, April 25th, 26th. Nepean, Ontario at the Nepean Sportsplex. Free admission and parking, great gear and equipment, paddlecraft. AdventureOttawa.ca for more information. Check it out. Especially if you're in the, even still, if you're not in the Ottawa area, it's a nice day for a good drive up there.
Yeah.
Lock and paddles are coming up this summer. Lachine Canal in Montreal on Saturday, July 11th. Peterborough Lift Lock Saturday, July 18th. Hartswell Lock in Ottawa on Saturday, August 15th. Parks.canada.ca if you're interested in attending any of those.
And I sent one to you. I think it was in New York State. It was a lock and paddle.
Oh, the Erie Canal lock.
Is that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I thought you sent that to me because we wanted to try it out.
No, it's because it's another lock and paddle. It's outside of the ones that we've been mentioning. So it was Upper New York State, right?
Yeah, in Lake Erie. Mm-hmm. Or, Erie Canal.
Yes. Yep.
Yeah. I'll post a link to that one on our website.
What was your observation? It was mostly kayaks.
Mostly kayaks.
Hmm.
A lot of these seem to be a lot of kayaks. Mm-hmm. Even when we went to the Ottawa one last year, John and I were there. And there was a
kayak people are fun and canoe people are boring.
Or canoe people tend to be farther up north away from the locks. Yeah. No, it just seemed to be a lot of, in the picture I saw, a lot of kayaks out there.
That was last year's, so I can't remember, did they say the date? We should include that to the list.
Yeah, we'll add that to the list.
Yeah.
But I'll put a link on our Facebook page and stuff like that.
That was a big lock in that video. In that
right?
Thing
maybe it was a small lock, just not a lot of, maybe they were all just
tiny
small
boats.
People. Yeah, just tiny, tiny boats, models.
The height change was staggering.
Well, there's a few of them on the Trent Severn that are like that.
I remember when we
massive
did Two Men in a Canoe.
Right.
And we went into one, it was towering above us. It was like...
It's like Lord of the Rings type big...
kind of took your breath away.
Yeah.
It's like, that's a long way up.
Right?
Oof.
Oh, those are fun trips.
Yeah.
That's all I have this week. You got anything else?
I do not have anything.
Why not? You should.
I could talk about the cormorants.
Oh! Sorry, we saw cormorants. You're right.
Yeah.
We saw cormorants on our day trip with up the river here, too.
And I'm seeing at work that the cormorants are back.
And there's an update.
There sort of is. Well, we're hoping that the measures we took will make a difference so that my car doesn't get pooped on. But over winter, they've put all the bird spikes on all the parking lot lights and so on, and the forebay lights and so on. It's so they can't build their nests on the lights, and they can't poop down on people walking.
I'm rooting for the cormorants.
Because we had to close walkways and we closed parking lots. It was the risk of a health hazard, right? Because the bird flu thing is very common these days.
Oh, the avian.
Avian flu, yeah. So it was like, you were.
Well, and it's acidic too, right?
It's very acidic. Yeah. So when you're walking out to your car, you're looking up and, do I have to duck here? Oh, he's flying over. And they do. I think they know what they're doing. When they fly over and you see stuff come down, it's like, was he aiming at me? I'm pretty sure he was aiming.
He was aiming. Yeah. Bert, you got to get better aim, buddy. I'm rooting for the cormorants.
Yeah. So, yeah. So it should be a difference this year. I hope that... Not that we don't want them, don't like birds, but we just don't like them pooping on us.
Right. I like them pooping on you.
Cormorants, it's such an they are an invasive species, but their poo is so acidic. It just kills trees and plants. And,
yeah. We saw one last year going up the bottom of Duffin's Creek.
Yeah.
And we're thinking, oh, this better not be a sign of things to come. Mm-hmm. And I think I saw maybe six of them at the mouth of the creek this past weekend. They haven't gone up yet.
Yeah.
And hopefully they don't.
Hmm.
So hopefully, because there's a lot of other, like there's kingfishers, all that sort of stuff.
Yes. Yeah.
That go up there, swans and geese and ducks and everything. We don't need the cormorants up there as well causing.
Nope.
Especially when you got the beaver and the muskrats and deer and all the small normal animals up there too.
Normal local animal species that we expect that live in the area.
As opposed to the abnormal ones like platypuses, elephants.
Exactly. But no, I'm talking invasive species, which is what the cormorant is. Although...
Would you not consider an elephant in local rivers
as an invasive species? Can you imagine having an elephant poop on you from a tree?
The fact he pooped on me would not be the thing I'd be questioning.
That was impressive.
How did he get up that tree? I would have many other questions. Otherwise, then why did that elephant poop on me?
Watch out for the elephants. They're in season.
Oh, how was your canoe trip? Great up until the elephants. And then you turn and walk away. Well, alrighty then.
Yes.
On that note, we think we have gotten all the kinks out of the website.
Yep,
so go check out the website. Our blogs are all back up. I had to put all those up individually. So that took a bit of time. All our previous 530 shows are now available.
Yeah.
You should be able to download from all your regular places again.
Same old shows, but all new format, all new look, and it should be all pretty. So come and pressure test our up and running website.
Just don't break it.
Well, no. Hey, it'd be nice to know if it can be broken. Then we know what has to be fixed.
I got my first, something in the background updated.
Mm.
Yeah, that's what you guys have been saying for the last 10 years. So now I got to go and check to see that it's actually updated. Check out our new website, paddlingadventuresradio.com. New look to it.
It was forced on all us. That sort the of old stuff. One crashed.
Yeah. Dag nabbit.
Yeah. But it has that new carp smell.
It has that new website smell to it. if you want to find out more about us, go check our website, paddlingadventuresradio.com. We're on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. You can stream or download all our episodes on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Player FM, Podbean, Amazon Music, and all your favorite podcast downloading sites. Or just go to the episode page at paddlingadventuresradio.com, and you can stream or download all our podcast episodes there. And if you enjoy the podcast, please share it with your friends, family, and fellow paddlers. I want to thank everybody for listening this week. I'm Sean Rowley.
And I'm Derek Specht. We'll see you next time.